subject?
So I'm going to be speaking to agenda paper one, and this is just an update on our activities when it comes to the disclosure issues and more specifically the work on the IFRS
taxonomy. Thanks. Usually when we're in board meetings, these things are automatically on, so we don't actually go to press this. Anyway, so the aim of this topic is just to give you an update, and so the presentation will cover on slide 3 a bit about the disclosure initiative more broadly, some information about up-and-coming IFRS taxonomy releases, the 2015 and 2016 Common Practice Project, a bit of an update on where we're at with an exposure draft on the disclosure initiative about proposed amendments to IS7, and that, as you recall, incorporated some questions to constituents about the IFRS taxonomy, a short update on IFRS filing profiles and other areas of interest. So if I go to the disclosure initiative, and that starts on slide 5, this just gives you an overview of what we're trying to achieve with the disclosure initiative and give you maybe a pictorial description of how we're doing that. So let me just take you through it because it can be a bit cluttered. But at the top, we're sort of tried to describe what we think the disclosure problem is, because actually we've found that the disclosure problem is different things to different people. Disclosure overload is one aspect of the disclosure problem. Other people tell us it's not the right information that's in financial statements is another part of that problem. And, you know, largely it's about poor communication. All the information's there, they just need to put it together a bit better. And I suppose that's one area where taxonomy and digital reporting can help. If I move down to what we're doing about it, the disclosure initiative is made up of a number of different projects, and these are trying to be represented around the two different circles. So if I move to the left circle, we've got a number of projects which we think are really directed at enabling preparer judgment. And you can see here we have a project on materiality, and that's primarily a practice statement which gives preparers some guidance about how they might apply the concept of materiality. We're expecting that to go out tomorrow, so that's in its very final stages. That will be an exposure draft, and we're expecting to get comments on whether that actually will help preparers. The sort of greeny-greyish box at the top represents our Principles of Disclosure project, which looks at amending our general disclosure standard in IFRS, which talks about the structure and content as a high level of financial statements, and we're making some amendments to that. And they're sort of building on some clarifying amendments we made to IS1, which is that same standard, which talks about the basic structure and content of financial statements. So they're working together to what we hope to do is to enable preparer judgment. We've also got some other activities where we see that it's primarily about the IFRS writing better disclosure requirements. And so we've sort of in the starting phase of a project to work out an ISB drafting guide to how might we prepare better disclosure requirements. We're addressing some individual disclosure issues that IS7 amendments, which I spoke about earlier, relate to that. We're also reviewing, and we will, once we've got the drafting guide in place, review some existing standards. And we've got a sort of a sense of that in our Principles of Disclosure project. And we're also here, we've got some modelling of disclosures, and that goes a lot to what the IFRS taxonomy team do with the technical teams, and also how we think of disclosures more as a set of information that's going to need to be pulled together as clearly and concisely as possible. Hopefully all of that together is relate to improved disclosures. But let me just bring you down to the next slide, which is slide 6, which just gives you a bit more detail about what was in that Principles of Disclosure project. So the one that's looking at what can we do to our general disclosure standard that gives an entity sort of some help regarding what's the basic content and structure of a set of financial statements. And we're in the process of drafting a discussion paper, and the topics to be included in that are the components of the financial statements, so separating the primary financial statements and the notes. And that might seem very obvious, but actually we're not very explicit about that in our current guidance at the moment, and attributing sort of an objective. Each of them are doing different things in the financial statements, but they're all sort of trying to do the one thing together, but you have different roles. We're also then going to give some more guidance about materiality and aggregation, and here is actually where we're going to ask whether we should change the definition of materiality. So before I was saying we're going to issue a practice guidance, a draft practice guidance tomorrow, that's about just giving some guidance about how you might apply the concept. Here we're actually going to ask, have we got the right concept? And I know there's been some discussions at the SEC and in the FASB about the concept of materiality, and the FASB's got an exposure draft at the moment to amend their definition of materiality. Then we're also going to do some work on communication principles. This is about, you know, improving the communication of information in financial statements. So do we need any more guidance in IFRS about how you might format information or how you might connect information better in financial statements? I think there's a big question here whether that is something that should go in an IFRS, or actually is it something that should be more education material? But that's going to be addressed in the discussion paper. And then finally, some specific issues that we're looking at, and these drive a little bit from those broader principles, but also specific issues that have been brought to us as topics that people want us to look at. And that relates to sort of the cross-referencing of information. So can you refer to something that's in a management commentary but also have it included in your financial statements, so rather than repeating it twice? There's trying to put a general principle in IFRS that permits that. At the moment, it's very specific. Some work on accounting policies. I have to say accounting policies is the one disclosure where if I ask most users where could people improve, they would say accounting policies. There's a sense they tend to just repeat what's in an IFRS standard and don't give any flavour of what the entity is really doing or how that entity has applied that accounting policy. The next one is non-IFRS information and performance measures. So this tends to get a lot of press, and there's a question as to whether IFRS should permit or be more strict about the disclosure of those items in financial statements. And then finally, we've got a section about how to draft disclosure requirements. And here a national standards set of the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board has done some work to say, well, we've got these disclosure requirements. People often apply them like a checklist. That's one of the concerns that people say, that we've got too many disclosures because people don't use judgment. And one of the issues is people say, well, it's very hard to use judgment when you say you shall disclose X, Y, Z. And so this body of work is looking at how can we redraft that, you know, that list of requirements in a way that enables somebody to use their judgment. So maybe structuring the disclosure requirements differently or using different language to get into sort of that list or that set of information that might be useful. So if I move to slide 7, which just gives you a sense of the timeline and what we're working to. As I said, in the practice statement, the draft is expected out tomorrow. We hope to finalise the amendments to IS7 by the end of the year. Now, I'll touch on those IS7 amendments a bit further in this presentation. We made some clarifying amendments to our general disclosure standard last year. They're going to become effective from the beginning of the year. In Q1 2006, we're going to get the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper issued, and we're also going to do some other work, which I didn't really touch on here, but some work about changes in accounting policies and estimates, and hopefully that will come out in Q1 2016 as well. But I think that's a bit dependent on what the board decide to do with that body of work. So that sort of gives you a sense of what we're doing. You can see here the arrows below that we're continuing to work on this drafting guide and how we might draft disclosure requirements better, and we hope to bring a strategy paper to the board in December on that to really clarify how that interacts with the other work that we've been doing. And then also here we've got this thing about behavioural change. I think a lot of what we're doing in the disclosure initiative is about changing behaviour. So we're giving people the tools and removing barriers to enable people to change the way they disclose information, and a lot of that is already in IFRS. We are hoping that, and we're seeing that people are changing the way they disclose information on their own volition with the tools that are currently in IFRS. So if I move to the next section, and do stop me if anybody's got any questions, do stop and ask. So we'll move to the upcoming IFRS taxonomy releases. So if I move to slide 9, so this gives you a sense of what's coming up on the ISB's work plan, and therefore what's then impacting the IFRS taxonomy workload. So we've got leases, and I know Bartek's been working very busy on getting through the leases, and so that's still expected to be issued before the end of the year. A final standard, that is a significant amount of work for, or impact on the IFRS taxonomy. It's a significant amount of work and impact on IFRS generally. The next point is insurance contracts. I think the board is still re-deliberating that, so I would say a final standard wouldn't be expected towards the end, until the end of next year would be my estimate, but definitely not within the next 6 months. The when that does come through, that will have a significant impact. I think Bartek's already started working with the insurance team on some of the disclosures. There was actually a disclosure discussion in the board last month. So the next one is the amendments to IS7 statement of cash flows. So this we discussed that last month. So this relates to a requirement for entities to disclose a reconciliation of an entity's financing liabilities. So those liabilities whose cash flows would have gone through the financing activity line in the cash flow statement. It's really trying to get a reconciliation of an entity's, and I'm going to say commas, debt. That's how the requirement sort of was generated, but we've shifted it to financing liabilities for various reasons. That is going to be, we got permission to ballot last month or last week, and we would expect that to be issued before the end of the year with an effective date of 1 January 2017. We're thinking the board at the meeting last month decided we shouldn't have comparatives, so that 1 January 2017 will be a prospective disclosure. The next two items are annual improvements. I have to say that I'm not sure exactly what's going to be in there this year. Patrick might have a better sense of what's sitting in the annual improvements suite this year.
Minor
things. And then the next item is amendments to IFRS 8 operating segments. And I think these are some of the amendments which derived from the post-implementation review of IFRS 8. And I think that includes a bit more clarity around what is a chief operating decision maker, the level of the reconciliation to the financial, to the consolidated financial statements. I think there was some requests to define a few more line items that needed to be disclosed, amongst other things. So there's a few things that came out of that post-implementation review, which you'll see is coming through as amendments to standards, and that's scheduled within the next 6 months. The next, if I move to slide 10, these are the common practice projects, so the work that we've done on utilities, media, information technology and chemicals is coming to an end, so we hope to have a final update at the end of the year, and then we're in progress with the other projects, or the 2014-15 projects, which were retail, agricultural and measure, 2015-2016 projects. So there's a bit more detail on that in the next slides. So if I move to slide 12, swoop over there. So at the last meeting, I think most members here agreed with the that we should continue to review common practice and add common practice elements to the taxonomy if necessary. The scope of the 2015-2016 commas project, which we agreed with you and with the taxonomy review panel in July, relates to agriculture and leisure, and also to complete the review that we've started on retail. If I move to slide 13, in terms of how we get to that review, we've changed our processes slightly. We are now doing a sort of a pre-screening just to make sure that we're going to utilise our time and get directed sense of where the common practice items might lie. So we'll do a review of 5 to 10 companies first, select out of that, and that's not without tagging, etc.
These common practice ones are for the 2017 IFRS taxonomy, is that right?
If we look at the timeline, we would get a proposed taxonomy update in 2016.
Yeah.
Okay. So pushing that through, it wouldn't go through into the 2017.
Yeah, the one that's released in January of 17 would be likely.
Hopefully, depending on when in 2016 we got the proposed taxonomy update. There would be no tagging at the sort of individual level. We'd select sub-industries and certain note disclosures and then analyse those in detail with the tagging. So effectively do a high-level review, identify sort of either sub-industries or particular notes, and then once we've done that, then go into the more detailed review. So if I look at slide 14, it gives you a sense of what we discovered with this pre-screening results on the on agriculture and leisure. So in agriculture, we're going to concentrate on agricultural products and distillers and vintners, and in particular, the biological assets and the hedging notes. And then for leisure, we're going to look at casinos and gambling and hotels and resorts, so that'll be interesting. And then the keynotes will be borrowings and operating revenue. And you can also see that I think as part of that review, we noticed that there was quite a lot of common practice, or there was a sense there was, related to franchising activities. And we actually think that may be broader than those two activities, but we actually think that that's something that we haven't really covered in the taxonomy yet, so we're going to do some additional work to understand whether the common practice relates to franchising activities. So if we move to slide 15, this is the timeline. So Lou, you were just preemptive. Q3 2016 for the proposed IFRS taxonomy update. So hopefully that would then get in for the 2017 annual release. But as you can see, we've completed the pre-screening for the industries. And then for the next two quarters, we're going to do some more empirical analysis on those industries. And then I think the second quarter, you'll start to see some of the results in these meetings and other phone calls for discussion. So if I move to the next slide, is there any other questions on common practice? July 7. I7, the exposure draft, and will be a final standard, was an amendment which was requesting that entities disclose a reconciliation of financing liabilities, like I discussed before. It also required or proposed to require an amendment to require entities to disclose information about restrictions on cash, and in particular economic restrictions on cash. I think it arose a lot from the issues that have been in the press about entities' reluctance to repatriate funds because of the tax implications. And so therefore there's a sense that if an entity held cash on its balance sheet, it may not exactly be that amount of cash which was available for use by the group. So the exposure draft proposed those two amendments. Alongside those proposals, we made some proposals regarding the changes to the IFRS taxonomy, and we asked for responses to those proposals. If I move to slide 18, I think the first one related primarily to the reconciliation, and that asked companies whether we should anticipate some of the line items that might be included in that reconciliation. So should we, when developing a taxonomy related to a standard, should we anticipate some of the common practice that might be included as a response to that amendment? The board decided not to include anticipated common practice in the IFRS taxonomy. They felt that the taxonomy should reflect what is in the standard. We asked constituents, and I think the response was divided, but when going back to the board didn't change their mind on this, so that the taxonomy will continue just to relate to what is in the standard itself. One thing that the board did decide in terms of the reconciliation was to provide a more detailed example of the reconciliation in the standard. So that in itself will promote a slightly more detailed description of the line items that might be seen in that reconciliation, and therefore do some of the work that perhaps this proposed or anticipated common practice might have done. But I think my takeaway from this discussion about anticipated common practice is that there are divided views as to whether it would be a good thing for the board to do, but I think on the majority that the board doesn't want to actually do anticipated common practice at the moment. If I move to slide 19, that's in effect what I just discussed. So if I move to slide 20, I think the other feedback that we got on the proposals in the exposure draft related to the drafting of a proposed paragraph which related to those cash restrictions. So when we drafted the proposals, it wasn't clear whether that was requiring an entity to describe the restrictions on the cash, or was it requiring them to quantify the restrictions or the effects of the restrictions on the cash. And that was, I think, apparent in the way that we drafted that taxonomy. We proposed that it was a quantitative amount, but we did have feedback to say, well, that's not exactly clear in the standard. I think in terms of how we're going to take that forward, it's very easy because the board last week decided not to progress that amendment. So the amendments that will go to final are only the reconciliation, not those related to the cash restrictions. And the work on the cash restrictions will be brought back as a scoping document to the board, hopefully early next year, to determine whether we're going to do a broader project. Because I think there was a feeling that this that the restrictions on money that are used to make up cash and then are often used to assess an entity's liquidity is broader than just a cash question. A lot of that information is held in other investments, and also I think it's a broader question about how an entity manages its liquidity. So although we learnt a lot in terms of being precise of the wording in the taxonomy and that reflecting in the standard, we will not be taking forward those proposals going forward. Now if I move to, is there any other questions on IS7? No? So I'm just conscious of the time, so I'll move through the IFRS filing profiles, which is on, I think that's slide 23, even though it's not saying it. So the current status is we published our first profiles on the website, and I think that was in June. We have surveyed countries and regulators. That continues. I know that Grace in Tokyo has been leading our efforts there and has continued to pursue those who haven't responded for responses. We are expecting a second batch of profiles to be released at the end of the year. If I move to slide 24, I think the trends that we've seen is that there's a split between the where the IFRS taxonomy is mandatory and where it's optional in filings. I think most jurisdictions create extensions based on the taxonomy. However, there's some use without changes or additions. Most jurisdictions do not require allow preparers to include extension items. That's in the taxonomy itself. And the version of the IFRS taxonomy use and frequency of the update is quite varied, and I think that's one thing we definitely took away, that there are some sort of differences in the version of the taxonomy that's used across jurisdictions. So if we move to slide, another one, 25. In terms of adoption update, we know that a number of jurisdictions are looking to update the version of their taxonomy. And we also know that there are some jurisdictions, and I look to my left, that are publishing consultations which involve the IFRS taxonomy. In terms of moving on to other areas of interest, I think there's three slides here, which again is a slide without a number. That would be slide 27. So other projects, entity-specific disclosures. I know Andy and Rita discussed the extensions at the XII conference, and we're helping on a XII working group regarding extensions. And I think internally we're still considering whether we should do an IFRS-focused paper on the use of extensions. In terms of encouraging regular updates, we had a discussion with you last May. We continue to discuss that internally, and we're also making sure that we consider that in the work that we're doing on terms and conditions, which is the last point on this list. Those are being drafted at the moment, and I think they're actually at our director level for review, but we will be circulating those for review afterwards. As I said, I think when we've discussed terms and conditions before, here we're really just trying to protect the integrity of the IFRS taxonomy rather than using this as an issue to restrict people's use. It's more about making sure that the IFRS taxonomy is the taxonomy and we protect our brand. In terms of data modelling, I suppose our calls with Lou and the FASB continue. I think it's still very conceptual thinking process, but hopefully it's moving along. If I move to the next slide, in terms of translations, you can see that a number is still work in progress. We do have a translation in Arabic for 2015, and we are expecting the Japanese translation and the Spanish translation in Q4, so that should be soon. And then finally, I'll move to 29, and I'm just going to be right on time, which is just in new changes to our taxonomy illustrated. And just to say, when you've got an uncollapsed view, you're now going to see if there's changes within those actual groupings more easily. So I think Natic's been working on that. So thank you. So that's my update. That gives you 30 seconds for any questions.
Actually, we have until 9:35.
Oh, so wow. Damn, I should have talked for longer.
any questions from the group? Lou, you have
one? First is an observation of, I'm talking about common practice. At the board level, I see it as three different levels. At the board level, it's, you know, let's keep this theoretically correct and not put in common practice because they're not in the standards. At the second level is the preparers who are working on financial disclosures as well as XBRL. And like you said, it's mixed. You know, some want common practice, some don't. At the third level is people that are actually working regularly doing XBRL, and that group would say, give us the common practice because we want the tags so that when we see disclosures, we have the right thing to tag them with. So, and that's very practically perfect and correct. So you've got the theoretical all the way down to the practical and some in the middle. And it's just an observation that hopefully everybody can see everybody else's views. But I like the idea about let's have the standard put more examples in that have a detailed reconciliation, for example, so that you can pick common practice tags from that example. But otherwise, it's a dilemma between, you know, theoretical and practical.
I think the board is very conscious that to the extent that it issues anything, so whether that's an example, what's a standard, it will be sort of followed. If it's an example, even though that's not mandatory guidance, it will tend to flow that way, that people will respond to it and copy. And the same sense was with the taxonomy, that it could be seen as mandatory guidance, even though you could put all the sort of more health warnings you want all over it, but it could be seen by some, either by preparers or regulators or auditors, as, well, the taxonomy's got those items, then you must disclose those items. And I think that's the sort of the concern against, you know, the more practical version, which you're saying, which is Okay, it's an option. You don't have to disclose that, but if it is there and we do have that and it's relevant, it makes it very easy and comparable if you can actually get some consistency. But I think examples do exactly, one of the things I'm thinking, examples in standards do the same thing as perhaps the IFRS taxonomy listing would do.
Mm-hmm. And one other question, less than 30 seconds.
Sorry,
on slide 9, flip all the way there, but it lists the things that the standards are going to change in the taxonomy. So in other words, the things that this group is going to have to deal with. Which ones of those are substantial versus not substantial as it relates to impact on the IFRS taxonomy? My guess is they're kind of in order.
Yes, and that's why we've got significant.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Turn your head a little more.
You've asked me a tricky question, Lou. Oh.
Okay, so they're kind of in order as to. Okay, that helps. Thank you.
So we do have about 30 seconds. Any other thoughts, questions before we move on to the next presentation? No? So let's go ahead and move along.